Welcome to the Lubar Executive Education Podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about ways to grow your authority in your industry. With me today is Beate Chalette. Beate is a growth architect that provides visionaries and leaders with proven strategies, blueprints, and growth maps that provide clear steps to improve business systems, strengthen leadership skills in order to maximize profits and scale the impact of their organization. Her superpower is working with unique personalities and big thinkers and building executable systems. She's also the podcast host of the Business Growth Architect Show and listed among the top 100 global thought leaders by PeopleHub and one of 50 must-follow women entrepreneurs by Huffington Post. Welcome, Beate. It's great to have you here with me today.
I'm excited to be here, Mike. Let's go and dive right in.
All right. So to get us started, can you talk a little bit about your leadership journey and how you got into helping others grow and foster their success?
Yeah, I think that like probably most leaders, I figured out what a shitty one I was. And then when there's this moment and you go to the bathroom and then you come back and your entire team has gone to lunch pretending like they didn't know where you were, you go, oh, something's happening here that is probably not reflective of my brilliance or how I see myself. And I realized that there's a absolute discrepancy between how we see ourselves and the way people perceive us, and that the perception of others of us supersede my perception of myself. And that we then have to dive into that journey, becoming a leader that is based on how other people perceive that person and then become that.
Well said on how we see ourselves is very different sometimes than how others see us, especially if maybe we're not being that great leader that we aspire to be. And that leads me to, I guess, the next question here. A lot of the leaders that we work with in executive education have established a really good track record, and they're viewed as being high potential by their organization and by their senior leaders. Many of them want to become an authority or expert in their field. So where do they start in that journey of really establish themselves as a thought leader and an expert?
Yeah, so this is like one of my favorite things. I did an insights paper on this where I, during COVID, interviewed a lot of C-level executives. And I said, what do you want? And they said in unison, we want somebody to walk into my office, sit down and say, Mike, here is what my skill is. Here's where I can bring the organization value. Here's how I make you look good. Here's the programs you should put me on. Here's the opportunities I can help you with. That's all they want. They want you to tell them. The reality of what's happening is that somebody walks into the office and they go, you know, Mike, I've been here for a couple of years and really would be nice if there was an opportunity that I could shine. I mean, by now you probably should know what I'm really good at. I mean, at least I think you should. But John really likes working with me. So what do you say? Is that an opportunity where I can show you what I got? And the leader goes like, out. You just wasted 3 minutes of my valuable time. Yeah. So the first thing you need to understand, and I'm going to be very blunt here, is that the unapologetic value proposition on how you show up, that's your job. You need to know this. But then your mom told you, don't brag, Mike. Beate, your work should speak for itself. You don't always need to tell everybody how great you are. That's not helpful. Or how about speaks a lot on your report card or offers unsolicited advice? Constantly interrupts with new ideas, can't follow existing rules. That's all really good stuff for an organization, by the way. But we are being taught in the educational system to not be that. And then we think our boss, who is being judged on innovation and advancement and profits, is going to look at us and give us a reward or an A for being well-behaved. So that is the first discrepancy in your head. In order to be an authority, you have to overcome. What you've been told is a lie. There is no reward. There's no A for behaving a particular way. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be a jerk. You have to be a team player. You know, certain things still apply. Narcissism doesn't really get a lot of rewards in the long run. But what I'm saying is that the ability to say, okay, so what am I really good at? I'm able to take very complicated things and break them down very quickly in processes. I mean, it goes instant. I'm so good at this that I don't even understand how other people cannot know this. So that's always a really good start. Is if you're completely surprised that other people don't know how to do something, that hints on where your super skill might sit. It's like, what do you mean you don't know an Excel pivot table? How can you not know how to use an Excel pivot table? Because I rather organize my sock drawer. Oh, there's people that don't like pivot tables, huh? No, there really aren't. So grab the pivot table opportunity, please, by all means. Or how about the performance review, where in the performance review, where that very person that's gone through the same school that you did was like, you know, I can see how good you are at sales and talking to clients and closing deals, but boy, your writing is just not up to par. So thank you for bringing millions of dollars into this company because you're such a great seller, but now I'm going to terrorize you on your performance review with a pip, no less. Did you now have to learn how to write, which terrifies you because you're dyslexic? That's why you're so good in talking, because you learn how to overcome your dyslexia by being really persuasive on the phone. You see how that all doesn't make any sense. So now you then need to go into the office and say to your boss, Mike, you know what, Mike? I totally get that. But the way we've solved it, Mary on my team, we tag team on this. So I close the deals, I'm on the phone, and then she does the recap. And we've figured out a great system on how to use AI where I now have everything transcribed. I put it in AI, it pumps out the bullet points, it sends it over to Mary. Takes Mary 10 minutes to do the follow-up and we tag team and it works really well. Trust me, you want me on the phone. Okay. So you build authority by owning who you are and stop making apologies for what you're not.
I really like that concept. And as you were talking, I'm thinking about as you're determining your unapologetic value proposition, as you like to say, part of that process is not only figuring out what you're good at, but trying to figure out what you're not good at. And that can sometimes lead to a little bit of imposter syndrome. And I've seen many leaders that are trying to project that they're really good at everything, which is pretty much impossible. So how do you avoid that trap and embrace the fact that you're not good at everything?
I think that comes with just doing leadership development. I mean, I wrote a book called Happy Woman, Happy World. And in this book, I have a concept called the superhuman paradox. And the superhuman paradox says that we look at our environment. So I look at Mike. Mike's really smart. So I want to be like Mike. Then I look at John. John's got a six pack. I'm going, that would be kind of nice if I'd be fit like John. So I want to be like John. Then I'm going to look over to Mary. And Mary is a phenomenal cook, organic, home cooked. I mean, she purees, freeze dry. I mean, hold on. So now I want to be a cook like Mary. Then I go to Chanel's house, and Chanel is like the decorator. I mean, you walk in her house, it's perfect. So I want to be like Chanel in the house. So now I go home after I've looked at the single best quality of all my friends. And now I need to become the accumulation of my friends' single best attribute in one person. Ta-da! Ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. So if you want to run around suffering from superhuman paradox, besides who has the time to hit the gym like John 3 hours a day, and spend 4 hours a day on food preparation like Mary. I mean, that's already 7 hours of your day. Forget being a partner or decorating your house. I mean, if you pick up a sock, you should be lucky. So it's about understanding yourself and understanding your skill set. And then when we have that, then we can say, do I want to spend 4 hours in the kitchen doing organic home cooked meal? It would be great. But I don't have 4 hours a day. And everybody knows to get a six pack, you're gonna have to do a lot of exercises in a lot of repetitions, and it ain't not pretty. And you're gonna have to have the will, the desire, and the time to do that. Can I or can I not do that? So I think that there's also a realistic expectation to say it's not that I cannot do that, but now my main focus is not that. My main focus is something else. My main focus is on my career right now. My main focus is on my relationship. My main focus is on being a mother. So we need to also cut ourselves a little bit of slack and then stop covering this nonsense. But I think that this covering is a is an organizational disease. Oh my God, if I'm going to be found out that I don't know how to do Excel pivot tables. Find someone who knows how to do it, partner with them, tag team, and then hammer down on your strength. What I do is I teach a strategy. And when I tell you what the strategy is, you're going to laugh. And the strategy is very simple. When somebody tells you something completely outrageous, right? On whether that's to a woman in a meeting, don't be so emotional, or that somebody says, like to this guy that brings in millions in sales, that now he needs to learn how to write better. This is what you do. You put your glasses down, you lean slightly back, and you go, oh, good one, Mike. Yeah, sure. You know that I make more money for the company if I'm in sales. So let's just keep it that way. And you just move on. Done.
Simple way to do it, right? That's sometimes it's the most simple thing. That's the best answer. So once you've decided on your direction and, here's what I'm going to be good at, or here's what I am good at, and here's how I'm going to play to those strengths, how much does mindset play into becoming successful and maintaining your success?
Well, that all goes into it because now you're going to have to pitch it. Because now you're going to have to run around and say, sales on the phone, me, opportunities, sales on the phone, me, pivot table over here. Then you have to put together your value proposition. And the unapologetic value proposition said, this is what I'm really good at. And you have to say, this is why it's necessary for the company. And this is what I can bring to the company, and this is how I can make my boss look good. And then the mindset comes in, and you say, "Do you really actually believe that?" Because then people go like, "Well, shouldn't they know this? Shouldn't they see this on their own?" No, they don't. They're busy with themselves. They're busy worrying about what other people think of them. They don't have time for you. You need to walk in there. I have a great example for that. I just interviewed Matt Ryder from Seventh Level. I'm probably one of the best salespeople currently alive. And he gave me this example and I was rolling on the floor. And he goes like, well, when you go in a supermarket and you take an avocado, you look at the avocado, you put the avocado down, you walk out of the supermarket without the avocado. Does the manager of the store come after you and tell you that you destroyed his life because you didn't bring the avocado? Are the employees upset that you're not eating guacamole tonight because their livelihood depends on that one single avocado? Shouldn't you have known how important it is that you buy this one single avocado? So when you really put it in relationship, nobody cares. It's like an avocado. Nobody cares on whether or not you buy the avocado. Most people just don't care enough. It's up to you to make them care.
It's a really great example. Thanks for sharing. And, as you're talking here, I'm thinking about my next question, which was going to segue to we've been talking about personal success up to this point, and you've already started making that transition to as a leader, how can what we're talking about today be used to help grow the organization and people around you?
It always is about saying, am I the right person for this? Who am I going to give the opportunity to do this? I'm part of a nonprofit organization called Women in Technology Hollywood. And one of the board members, the secretary, has decided to step down. And then everybody's like, oh, why are you stepping down? Why are you stepping down? And then she said one simple sentence. She says, it's time for someone else to lead.
That's a powerful realization and got to be really tough, I think, to actually come out and say that.
I thought when I heard that, and everybody was like, oh no, but why don't you? And I said, you know, this is something that resonates so much that where we are in our career, need to make room for other people to lead. And what does that then mean? Mentorship, leadership. Because if I get all the credit if I mentor someone into leadership, it's my. I did this. I still get the credit. I don't have to prove constantly that I'm the right one for the job. I'm the right one for the job because I can see who else has potential. That's what's good for the organization. And that makes me advance and it makes them advance, because the minute I vacate this position, what's the next position I'm going after?
It reminds me of a leader I used to work for who always talked about being an exporter of talent. So if you can help build more people, obviously you have people to fill your role when you go to move on to something bigger in the organization, hopefully. And then you're really seen as a huge asset to the organization. Speaking, kind of tying back to what you're talking about before, is where's the value that I bring as a leader to my organization? And kind of moving this conversation here a little bit to talking about scaling a business. So I know you talk about scaling a business is kind of the result of a mix of successes and failures. And you talk a little bit about failing your way to success. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that people have this attachment to failure as being found out and getting an F on the report card, going back to this original thing.
Yep.
Because in school, when you get an F, the look of the teacher is one of concern. You're going to be left behind. And again, I think it's a completely wrong perception of how the real world works. The real world works in you asking yourself three questions. Is it possible? If it's possible, it must be possible for me. If it is possible for me, then what do I have to do? Not can I? So this is the reframe of if it exists, it's possible. If it's possible, is it possible for me? If it's possible for me, how? And then we have this idea that life is a flat line. We begin, it's a flat line all the way over here, and then we die. And on this, it's like, it's just like blubbering along like a little river. Well, there's rain. Sometimes the river goes over the riverbed. Sometimes there's a drought. It's a trickle. Sometimes it's completely dried out and there's nothing. So the concept of nature is there's always fluctuation. But we, because we people and we think that we're the only ones who can overcome our natural flow in life, that we decide that everything that we do is a flat line and very boringly. I think that's called a government job, if you really ask me. Working at the post office, God bless them. If that's what you want, you can get that. But that's not really leadership, in my opinion. So the failure aspect of it is when I drive my car, and ever so often there's the GPS message and says, Beata, you need to update the GPS. But I'm very busy. You know, I have to drive here. I have to go there. I need to go to the gym. Who has time for all of this? And inevitably, in here in Los Angeles, they're building that thing under the freeway, my shortcut, gone, closed. So now I'm going to go there. I'm going to get out of the car. I'm going to throw myself on the ground. I'm going to go, oh my God, I'm the worst driver in the world. That's it. I'm giving up driving. That's it. I'm returning the car and the insurance is expensive. And who wants to drive in Los Angeles anyway? And the traffic, it's just not worth it. That's it for me. I'm done driving. And by the way, the destination that I wanted to go to probably is not there anymore either. There's nobody ever. You just give yourself a slight dap on the head, update the GPS next time. You may even wave at the guy with a hard hat and the chic neon outfit with the reflective stripe and the stop sign. You say, yeah, no, the road's closed now, thanks. And you find gasp, shock, another way, because your destination is still there. Because your friend didn't move away in that 3 seconds, you took a wrong turn into a dead end. Your friend's like, dude, what took you so long? Oh, you took a wrong turn. So if we have this concept of that, if something doesn't work and you just keep that visual of the guy in the hard hat and you keep waving and say, got it, eliminated that, it brings you closer to the yes. That's what I mean with failing away.
I really like talking about reframing failure with that example. And you start off this piece here with the question about what do I have to do versus can I do this? I think that's really powerful. And hopefully everybody can take that forward here after they listen to this today. Well, before we wrap up this episode, what final advice or thoughts would you like to share with our audience?
Yeah, just don't drown in a puddle. People get so caught up in their own story of what it all means. It means nothing. Just think avocado. It literally, for most people, means nothing. They are not here. They're not going on vacation to make your life miserable. They just want to go on vacation. They didn't get the job done to stick it to you. They forgot. Somebody got sick. They weren't feeling well. They had a personal problem. They got a terrible phone call. So the drowning in the puddle is the catastrophizing of what's happening to you. Just take it down a notch. It's, if you really think about it, it's really not that bad. If you're here in the now, there's a great spiritual message, and it says, your past experience is already over. Your future hasn't even happened yet. So you're really only here right now. So right now you're listening to this podcast. In this very moment, there literally is nothing bad that's happening to you because you're listening to a great podcast. You have to feel good, right? So focus your attention on the big things and stop worrying about all this little stuff.
Well, that is great advice. Well, Beate, thank you so much for making time in your schedule to talk with me today and share your thoughts with our audience. If anybody's interested in learning more from you, where can we point them to?
Yeah, so the first thing I want you to do is I actually want you to find out what your talent is worth. So we literally just created a new quiz, and it's called whatsyourtalentworth.com. And you go there and you put in what you know, your level of expertise, scarcity, whatever it is, and it spits out a number. And then you look at that number and you look what you're making right now. And then let's have a conversation about what we can do about that, because I think that I want people to really understand that they have value and then own that value and then learn how to articulate what they can do with what they're really worth. Other than that, reach out. We are all on social media, either as the Growth Architect or Beate Gillette. You can schedule an uncovery session with our business growth advisor. If you heard something, we say, I really should talk to her, then make sure you mention the show. And while we edit, will you do Mike a huge favor? Wherever you pick up this podcast, go there now and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Comments are critical for algorithms to show that there's engagement on this podcast, which will help Mike to put this in front of more people because this is a labor of love, and share this episode with one other person.
Well, thank you, Beate. I couldn't think of anything better to say with that. And I will add information about your resources into the show notes for everybody for easy access as well. In closing, I'd like to take a moment and thank our listeners. We wish you the best of luck as you move forward on your leadership journey. Please check back regularly for additional episodes.